How You Entrepreneurs. Today, we have Ben Silver on. He is a magician and a sommelier. He is the only combined magician and sommelier in the world. He's an impressive character. He basically fell into this love of magic. He goes through similar struggles that we all do. It's just very, very unique. I knew nothing about the back workings of the magician world. So if you have any interest or you've seen a magician, you want to be a magician, you want to be a sommelier, you're going to want to listen. You're going to want to subscribe. And of course, tell your friends. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to the road to growth, success of an entrepreneur.
We've raised the bar.
Learn firsthand from successful business owners and create your own path to success.
I'm going
to
show you how great I am.
It's time to hit the road to growth with real estate agent Vinny SD.
All right, Ben, we are here with Ben Silver. He is premier magician. He is a magician and a sommelier. He's the only magician and sommelier in the world. Right, Ben?
It's true. Ta-da! Here I am, everyone.
And so I wanted to tell everyone listening right now, we're going to be trying something very unique at the end of this podcast. He's actually going to show a trick, an illusion. We'll see how this kind of works out for the listening audience. But something to stay tuned for later on.
Yeah, I'm excited to do it. This illusion I'm going to do today, I think will play pretty well over the radio podcast form. And it's something that took me about 3 years to actually get all of the, we won't call them magic fundamentals because it's deeper than fundamentals, but the magic knowledge in order to be able to accomplish this. And it actually just came to me about 3 weeks ago. There was a little aha moment. And I'm like, that's how you do it. So Pretty excited about it. I've been doing it in my close-up shows and stage shows pretty recently. So I'm excited to do it later on today.
This brings me off on a tangent before we start getting going. Now, when you said it just kind of came to you, is that how most of the magic tricks come? Or is it like taking off another trick that was someone else did? Or how does that usually work with building a routine, I guess?
Sure. So that's an often question that I get. And some tricks, a lot of tricks, are kind of classics, or they'll be fundamentals, or magicians will invent them. You have magicians, you have who are inventors, and you have magicians who are performers, and sometimes you're both, and those are the real badasses of magic. So they'll usually create a new trick, and then they release it to the magic community, and then you buy it, and then you put your own spin or interpretation on it. Huh. Now, sometimes, for certain events I do or companies I work for, if they're launching a new product or they have a theme, then I will maybe create an illusion for that company, for that event. And depending on what the event's calling for, I may borrow some thoughts from previous use tricks, or I'm just going to go completely original as far as this is what the end result is. How can I make that happen? And it's through trial and error, maybe consulting with other magicians who have been doing this longer than me, who have read more text, who know more fundamentals. So,
they sell their tricks or illusions. Is there a website? Is it a network of people, or you see a trick that happens and you reach out to the magician afterwards, or how does that come about?
Sure. So, certain magicians who have created their own content have their own websites. They'll sell it directly on their website, and then there's different magic dealers. Online, so like Penguin Magic is one, Murphy's Magic is another one, and so there is a place to kind of showcase magic that's being released by inventors or magicians. So you go on there and pay anywhere from $5, $10 to $500 or $2,000 for a trick. And so after you buy it, now you're allowed to do it. It's kind of like, if you're unlike stand-up comedy, it's very much, that's my joke, I did it, if you steal it, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
But if you actually buy the trick, now do it.
Yeah.
You're allowed to, okay? But don't do my version, but here's the tools. Like, here's, do it. So a lot with magic is you want to show who you are as a performer and your take of it, your spin on it. So that's what you want to do. I mean, you have the fundamentals on that trick. You know how it's done. Make it your own. Make it awesome.
Wow. So do you always know you wanted to be a magician?
I didn't always want to be a magician.
Okay.
Always wanted to be an artist when I was a kid. So grew up painting. I did oil on canvas with my fingers. and actually was a doing pretty good as an artist, as well as an artist can do. And I was actually at one of my art shows, they hired a magician to do strolling close-up magic at like a gallery showing. And I was like, that's pretty cool. I think I want to do that. So just always been good with my hands. So with time and practice, the sleight of hand has come pretty natural to me.
Wow. So was it a quick turn, or was it just that one event that said, I want to basically go that direction?
So the kind of origin of my magic was a couple of different influent pieces in my life, if I want to piece them together. When I was in sixth grade, I dated a girl whose dad was a magician. He had a Porsche, and I was like 12. So that was like, that's pretty cool, right? Yeah. You can do that. That was one moment. Didn't think I'd be a magician, but saw some of that. I was impressed. Working, I've been in hospitality for about 20 years now. We'll get to that with the sommelier part. But working at a hotel, kind of high end, I was working with a bartender. He showed me my first real card trick. That was 17 years ago. I actually just ran into him at a local gig this weekend, which is pretty cool. I did that same trick for him. And then my whole close-up set, he's like, I didn't teach him that one. So it was pretty cool to run into him. So that was my first real card trick. That was pretty cool. And then working in hospitality, serving tables, I would do a couple of tricks just to kind of get better tips. And there was a point where I now met another magician who was doing close-up magic at a restaurant I was working at. And again, oh, you can actually make money doing this. That's pretty cool. And that combined with me doing my, you know, art gallery, a presentation with another magician doing that, there is actually something you can do here to make money doing magic.
Was there a learning curve, learning magic?
Yeah, magic takes time. Yeah. There's certain pieces I'm still working on that I've been working on for a long time now. Some sleight of hand takes a long time. I have practiced one trick this one time was an hour and a half, ripped up four decks.
Wow.
Still can't do it. I don't think it's like a flourish. Some flourishes would be something that's kind of interesting to look at, but it's not really psychological. It's not mind, like what just happened. It's not making you question reality. I'd rather focus on that type of magic than he practiced, he's good with his hands. So it's cool to have some of those flourishes involved, but I'd rather the magic be, you know, mind boggling.
So you were talking about three of the components that kind of built the person you are today, or at least started you on the path to the person you are today. How did you go about finding out the tricks to use, or finding out how to put together a set? Was it word of mouth? Was it networking? How did that come about?
A lot of it was just done through online. So I started kind of seriously back in, we'll say 2008. And at least we had online content as far as DVDs, videos. I got kind of started looking into a certain trick. Learned how to do that. And then some of these websites, they just have all these really cool illusions. You don't know that they're going to be hard to actually learn. You're like, but I want to do that. So you buy that for $35 and you buy another one for $35. So it was that, between that and the books. And then as far as getting the set put together, getting scripting down, polishing out the set, finding the sequence, these are things that it's continually growing. I just had a great mentor take me through my current set and kind of rephrase things and give me he's been doing it for 40 years. So I've been doing it for 12 almost. So he obviously has an insight on these things. So I kind of restructured the set through an extra, kicker, I guess, to the trick. And it's playing a lot bigger now.
Oh, wow.
So going from stuff you've already been doing it to a new interpretation, maybe the order could be switched out. So that's something that just kind of takes time. And then, like I said earlier, how the trick I'm going to perform later kind of just came to me. It's certain times when you're just contemplating or driving or, you know, there's those moments that a new thought, a new interpretation for that trick can be done, a new delivery. So
has there... You know, this is the only assumption. Sure. I don't know how easy it was to find gigs for the being a magician. Was it fairly straightforward? Was there a lot of struggles getting rejected, or what did that look like once you actually knew you wanted to make it a career?
Sure. First gig I ever did was at the restaurant I was at. Someone hired me to do a wedding, And I was very excited to do that. I made $75 an hour, which at this point, it was I wouldn't take that that gig. But at 12 years ago, first gig, I'm like, that's awesome, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was very excited about that. And then a lot at the beginning was kind of word of mouth. I got a website, but again, people aren't really searching for you or know who you are. And that's an ongoing thing, is how people are going to find you. So, you know, consulted with people as far as getting the right kind of SEO content on my page so things can find it. I now do Google Ads. Yelp has helped me out a lot. I'm the number one magician on Yelp in San Diego, and also on Google, the number one ranked magician in San Diego. So those things kind of help you, but those are also some of the challenges as far as keeping up with that. I don't want to write new content every day. I want to practice magic and perform. So I have had assistants in the past, and I have someone who I work with on the web development side to do certain tasks like that. But it's ultimately on me to keep content going in there so that those search engine bots can find me there.
How do you stay up to date on the magical work, right, the magician work, and also the SEO platform? Is it outsourcing most of it? Is it bringing the admin on and telling them this is what you need to figure out is how SEO is going to, or how does that work?
Yeah, it sucks. Okay. It's a struggle. So I'm currently looking for a new assistant. So
if anyone listening,
BenSilverMagic.com, reach out to me. Old assistant, great. She got married. She's busy being married. So good for her. But it's a constant struggle just for all the things that you want to do to grow a business. As far as even just old clients I've had, and I mean I had 6 gigs last week to just follow up. Thank you for having me. Making sure you keep that relationship going, maybe getting some of the footage from the photographer that was there, which is always great. People always want to see pictures, videos, how you're performing. And I don't always feel comfortable. I'm there to work. I'm not there to sit there and take pictures of myself. So, but I do want that content to show other people if they're interested, so they have an idea of what they're going to get when they hire me. So it's ongoing with that. And as far as, getting more event planners, you know, on board so they can pitch your services. So that's an ever going journey as far as just reaching more people who know what I am, what I do, so they can get excited about it and share with their clients, their friends, their family.
When do you think you learned and maybe you're still learning it, like how much time is dedicated towards the maintenance for past clients or maintenance of your SEO and then learning new tricks and actually doing the work? So I know that at least for people that I train in the real estate field, it's like always that struggle. It's the 80-20 rule. Like 80% of what you do is only going to get you 20% of what you get the results, and the opposite, right? So
it really depends on the time of year.
Okay.
So right now we're in late September, and right now this is like main time for booking and promoting holiday parties for December.
Okay.
So December is my biggest month of the entire year. It is for many professional magicians. There's corporate holiday parties. It's in the budget to spend money. So we're busy. I did 28 gigs in 23 days last December.
Wow.
I was traveling all over the country. I mean, I was in Texas one day, Florida 2 days later, San Jose 2 days later, and then that same day from San Jose flew back to San Diego for another gig. So it's there's no SEO, there's nothing else. It's just like sleep, plane. I mean, I'm grateful to be doing it, but it's just like you're just doing magic and trying not to look tired. And eating like nuts and bananas on the road between gigs, and then when it's done, you're like, yes, it's cool.
What's the opposite? The downtime, is that January then, or
January? You still get the holiday parties for people who don't want to spend the premium fees as far as event space.
Yeah.
So January is actually a pretty good month also, because you have that kick for that corporation. Like, let's save $20,000 on the venue and let's do it, you know, a week or two later.
Yeah.
So I already have a couple of January gigs booked. So that's good. I would say kind of after February, I think kind of slows down a little bit, but then also the corporate season starts again with conventions. So I'm very, very lucky that I only have a straight downtime, but there are times when I can find those 4 hours in the morning, you know, 2 or 3 days a week to like, let's get the admin part of this job going.
Fair enough.
And then we'll also get to the other part, but I'm also a sommelier and I work as a wine director currently. So I have that aspect going. There's actually a trade tasting today for a big distributor I'm not going to go to because I'm going to fall in love with a bunch of wines. I have way too much wine right now. I don't need to fall in love with more. And that's the other part of it, is that's keeping up with that, doing inventory at the restaurant, which takes hours.
So how does that work? Because so that's more of a, is that more of a steady job then?
Or yeah, like a
nine or whatever.
Type yeah, that, that's a, so I have a kind of unique situation there. I work there 6:30 through 9:30, 3 days a week, unless I'm performing in another, for a different client, which is obviously going to be paying me more money. Hmm. But if not, then I'm there and I have, you know, regulars and followers who come to see me there, and I do magic and serve wine. So it's a pretty good side gig. If I'm not doing something else, I'm still doing my passion at a restaurant. I get to make the wine list there, share wines that I love or that I think that fit well for the restaurant to kind of give people a great dining experience.
So where did that come from? Where did that idea come from? Magic, sommelier, bring them together. A necessity or a passion, a love, or
yeah. So, turning over to kind of the sommelier
yeah.
Aspect of my life. So, I've been in hospitality about 20 years. Worked every job from busser, bar back, bartender, server. When I was serving tables, I actually moved to Sedona, Arizona. I was working at a wonderful resort there, and I met a sommelier named Michael Robb, and great guy. Still in touch with him. Still drink wine with him when I see him. And I got inspired to actually get the Sommelier 1 certificate. And I got that at the time to get more job security as far as being a server. A lot of times when you go to fine dining restaurants, they ask you what's your wine knowledge, and having a level 1 certified, a level 1 sommelier, now I'm a certified, that kind of shows, hey, I care about wine. I took enough to take a test to show you that I studied wine. So that was my initial reason for getting that Sommelier 1. And after I did that, I studied so much, I started really kind of falling in love with wine. I did like it before. I had enough interest in it from hospitality. But now I'm like, this is great. This is something I want to pursue. So I moved to Santa Barbara, where that's a great wine country for Pinot Noir, Chardonnay in California, really nice, cool coastal climate. And while I was working there, I met the Court of Master Sommeliers president. His name is Fred Dame. He's been on those Somm documentaries, but great guy. I heard that he's doing a tasting, and I'm like, good, I'm gonna get a taste wine with Fred Dame. So I go there and he's just bullshitting about golf and fishing and everything else. I'm like, start calling wines, you know, do your thing, you know. And he didn't do that, but some of the distributors knew I did magic, so I did magic for him. And he was like, that's great, kid. He's like, whenever you want to take that level 2, you let me know and I'll sponsor you. And he ended up sponsoring me for that level 2. I reached out to him through LinkedIn. His secretary hit me up 2 days later, and then I gave myself about 6 months to study for the level 2 test, and I passed that in October of 2014. So now I'm considered a level 2 certified sommelier, which is where you want to be in order to, you know, conduct a wine program. So
is there another level above that?
There are. So now the next level would be the advanced sommelier, the level 3. That takes let me slow down. It takes first a recommendation or sponsorship from a master sommelier, the level 4. Hmm. You have to do a 3-day kind of training course, and then you come back and take the test. And this goes much deeper into the sommelier field as far as the minutiae you have to learn about wine, which is overwhelming. And it's just kind of like, I think the club is, we all hated life having to learn all this to get here. So you have to hate life too to learn all this. But when you get that credential, again, the job opportunities are vast. So at the level 3, now you're managing a Ritz-Carlton, a Four Seasons, a Michelin-rated, you know, restaurant. But you're also working 50, 60-hour weeks. And these are things that, as a magician, I just can't do because I don't work in December at a restaurant. I'm traveling. And I need the flexibility because no matter what, I'll make more money doing magic than I will as a sommelier. So that's an issue, is do I want to hate life for a year and a half to get a credential that I don't really need? Mm. Or would I spend a year and a half getting better contact with event planners, building business, building content, SEO, getting my show better so I can present it to better, bigger and better audiences? So I'm going to go that route. And then after the advanced sommelier, then you have the master sommelier. And now we are talking about memorizing. It's not written at the fourth level. like Croatian wines, like just Turkish wines, Armenian wines, and like knowing what, if they give you a plot of land, you have to know what that circle of land in Bulgaria, what that vineyard's called.
Wow.
Like, it's ridiculous. And then blind tasting wines, which is part of being a sommelier. I'm pretty good at it for what I do, since I'm in contact with a lot of wine. But I mean, I've only tasted wines back to, you know, maybe the 80s, and not very often. It's not often you come across wines like that, and they're very expensive. But you need to be tasting, oh, that's a 66. That's not a 68. Off taste and smell, and then know the region. If it's in Bordeaux, is it from Pauillac? Is it from Saint-Julien? So it's, the minutiae is crazy. But again, if you decide to go and be sommelier, advanced sommelier, master sommelier, you have a career. Like, you are set for life pretty much. If you want to be in the wine industry, you're making six figures and you're good. So
let's get back to the magician work, or it could be in the sommelier field. So what are some of the biggest struggles you've had to overcome? I know probably the learning of the tricks and everything like that, but what are some of the biggest struggles you've had to overcome over your career, over your life? Or
sure. I mean, with the wine, it's a huge struggle. I had to taste a bunch of wine.
Yeah, that's tough.
You spit the wine out, obviously, so you can remember what you're tasting.
Yeah.
Just the amount of knowledge you have to learn as far as regions, maps, laws through different countries, actually learning how to pronounce, I don't speak Italian or French or German, but I have to learn how to pronounce those grapes the right way, or those regions the right way, or it sounds like I don't know what I'm talking about. It's just, yeah, I don't speak those languages.
And you also said too about like the networking too with different event planners. That's probably been something that you've had to work on too.
Working on that, just every time I've moved, and I've been in San Diego back here since 2013, but every time you move, you kind of have to reinvent yourself in a new audience. So you're kind of going, when I was in Sedona, I was starting to kind of get a niche there. And then I moved to Santa Barbara, and people started to learn about me, and then I moved away. So now that I've been in San Diego, people know about me, and I can start to continue to work. I still have clients in Sedona or in Arizona and in Santa Barbara, but it's not as frequent type of thing. I mean, I've been poor for many years, just working as a server, working 2-3 jobs, bartending, you know, going to sleep at 4 o'clock in the morning, coming back at 9 o'clock in the morning to work Sunday football for a bunch of drunk assholes. I don't know how much I can swear here, but
no, swear away. Go ahead.
Fuck. I mean, it's probably within the last 5 years that I've finally been out of debt. On the other side, actually getting more notoriety. And it's a lot, just like everything. It's just the grind. The more you put into it, the vision that you have for it, and not just thinking that you want to do it, but actually doing it. It's the one thing about, I'm going to. It's not, I'm doing. So
was there ever a time that you thought, maybe this is not right for me, I need something else?
I didn't really think, I mean, this all kind of came together, say organically, like it just, oh, let's do that and do that. I mean, at a point I did want to do like a wine bar / magic club, but I think that the responsibility is as far as getting the liquor license, having staff, and the overhead on that would be more difficult. I have no overhead right now except for decks of cards and buying new tricks and then, you know, wine. So, I kind of just always, it's in me. Like it just is very natural for me to be who I am, doing what I do. And so it just made sense. So
is there a big why, or your big why, that's like pushing you to get bigger and bigger and more notoriety? Or is there anything behind that, or just that's the plan?
Well, you know, money is a great incentive.
Yeah.
And not everything is money, but that's one factor. You know, the more notoriety that you get, and in the right way, the more you can ask for audiences. Obviously, if they've heard your name, or you've been on nationwide exposure in a positive light, then you can demand more money. So that's one aspect on it. But I'm sure, like other magicians, or I'm a Capricorn, I like to overthink everything. If I put myself out there, I want to do it in a unique way at the highest way that I can perform. So I'm really performing a lot for my peers and not just for layman audiences or for the general public. And so that actually hurts me because I'm trying to kind of do too much on that aspect. So, however, when I watch magic shows or America's Got Talent or Penn & Teller Fool Us or some guy doing a magic special, a lot, I hit myself in the head. I'm like, really? That's what you're doing? Like, that's from the My Beginning Magic DVD. Oh, that's from that one. And you're doing that on Ellen. Like, you're on Ellen doing that trick. And I get bitter, as you can hear. But so I'm like, if you have that opportunity, like, prepare for it. Like, slay that opportunity.
Do you have your trick that you would do if you got the opportunity in front of nationwide audience?
I do. And I hopefully will be on Penn & Teller Fool Us. Oh, wow. This upcoming season or the 2020 season. So I have the trick planned out and there's two different versions that I'm contemplating which one I want to do. So practicing them both, and they have the essence of the trick is a signed card and a sealed corked wine bottle. And it's a strong piece and I've been doing it for a while. It's just here I have to do it in front of judges who know what happens in magic and in real time, and the slights have to be flawless. It has to be. So it depends on which version I want to go with. And we'll see. I have a couple months to figure it out. And then also it's not that it's the patter. It's the showmanship, the joking. It's not like, oh, I'm gonna put a card in a bottle. And it's everything about that performance has to be dynamic. So
how many times, because you know that it could be this upcoming year, or the following year, how many times do you actually envision yourself walking on the stage doing the trick? Do you do that? Like,
yeah. So in the next, we're in September, in the next 4 to 6 months, I mean, whichever version I finally decide to go with, I'll perform it probably at home 300-400 times. And then hopefully on four audiences, which I have performed it for audiences before. But again, it's less scrutinizing than when magicians are trying to judge you.
Yeah.
So excited about that opportunity. I've talked with the producer before, and so it's just getting the timing to get there and do it. So it's that's something in progress. Also have a potential pilot coming up for a wine and magic called, and working title, Saw Magic. And that would be kind of going to wine countries, performing for the wine club members, walking around the vineyard, or, you know, to the wine workers at the winery, and just kind of doing some impromptu magic, kind of blending kind of what I do together. So excited about that.
If you could talk to your younger self, that person that was just seeing magic kind of for the first time, see that card trick from the bartender, I think you said.
Yeah.
What, like, envision yourself that you could be on the show, have your own TV show, all that kind of stuff. What kind of advice would you give that person?
I guess it would be smoke less weed. So you can wake up in the morning and be more functional.
Yeah.
I mean, that's fun and all, but it's you know, it's hard for me to wake up when I smoke. So that's.
Does a weed give you any kind of like creative juices?
It does. It does. It gives you a lot of inspiration at night, and then you wake up in your morning like, man, that's a lot of work. But it does give me some you know, a lot of creative insight as far as performing and you know, dexterity or motion skills, and I, you know, unless it's something I've done 1,000 times, I'm not going to perform it if I'm under the influence.
Yeah.
But as far as the creativity or the thought or the sequencing or the inspiration, then it's definitely helped that on the career. Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
So Vinny, I need you to, before I'll kind of set the stage, we have a red deck of bicycle cards in front of me and a blue deck of bicycle cards across the table from me.
Okay.
Okay. Can you say a number for me, 1 through 50?
17.
17. Okay. Any reason in particular you chose 17?
You know, I think, even though I'm not a Charger fan anymore, I think Philip Rivers is 17. I don't know why that came to me.
We've
but
been watching him break hearts for the last too many years. Okay. Check this out. I'll take the cards out of the deck. You can see they're all different here.
Yeah. Everyone that's not watching. Yeah. All different cards.
All different cards. Random. I'm going to give it a quick shuffle here. Is that fair? Should I shuffle again?
No. That looks okay. It's random.
I'm going to riffle through. Whenever you like, you'll tell me to stop.
Now.
Right there?
Yeah.
You're sure?
Yeah. It looks halfway through, I think. Yeah,
great. We're about halfway through. Now, you can see the Ace of Clubs. You didn't stop there. That's the one right on top of it. You stopped right here.
Okay.
Presenting Vinny a card. Take the card for me.
Okay.
I'll take a look to the other side. You can show that camera. We're doing a little live.
There we go. Here's Instagram live, guys. Okay. All right.
And we'll put it back anywhere you like.
Okay. Sorry.
Great.
Okay.
Now I'm going to keep an eye on your card.
Okay.
Maneuver a couple of cards, and now the cards are all squared up, correct?
Okay, yeah.
What I'm going to try to do now is just by feel, cut the cards multiple times, retaining the position of your card, and put it into the 17th spot inside the deck. That would be pretty cool, even with a shuffle.
Yes.
It sounds like a real shuffle. It looks like a real shuffle. It's not. That would be pretty cool if I could find it and put it in the 17th spot of the deck, right?
Yes. That would be very cool. It
would be even cooler if I could do it without even touching the cards.
That would be pretty impressive.
I already did. Before you chose a number, before you chose a card, the exact card you wanted, that blue deck was across the table from me. It still is.
Yes.
Can you take out the cards and count out 17?
All right.
Let's go face down.
Face down.
And we'll stop at 16, okay?
All right.
Just face down. That's 1, 2, 3,
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
We'll stop right there. We'll stop right there. Now, if the 17th, can you tell me what the card was? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, 9 of hearts.
9 of hearts. If the 9 of hearts is the 17th card in a deck I never touched, 17 being a number you just thought of, that's fucking crazy, isn't it?
That'd be pretty wild.
Turn it over, the 17th card.
Oh, gosh.
Show the camera.
Oh, wow. That was a trip.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I don't know what happened there, but that was pretty wild. Maybe he forced me into saying 17. Maybe that's what it was. It mentally, he started throwing Philip Rivers comments out. That's what it was.
Yeah, we watched the game yesterday together and just watched Philip Rivers lose at the end of the game once again.
Oh, wow. That was impressive. All right, so, yeah, that was pretty wild right there. Am I able to look at the other cards?
Yeah, they're all different. Take a look. Like, that's the strong thing about this trick is it's
oh my gosh,
solid hands off. It's so pure. Any card you wanted at any number you wanted.
Huh. Look at that. All right. Well, anyone that follows on Instagram, they can probably watch the piece right there. I have no clue what happened. Anyone? So where can people find you to watch these tricks?
Yeah. So best place to find me and my tricks would be bensilvermagic.com. I'm on Instagram at bensilvermagic. You can type Ben Silver Magic into Google. I try to streamline it. And I do performances, wine magic dinners, which is kind of a niche for me, opposed to other magicians who are not sommeliers, which is every other magician. but I travel all over the country doing a lot of business retreats, team buildings, corporate dinners, holiday parties, high-end weddings, 50th birthday parties, whatever it would be. So come see me there. I have, again, on Ben Silver Magic on YouTube. You can find me there. I don't do a Twitter because I'm not looking for a bunch of people to start, dissecting everything I do. Not looking forward to extra scrutiny. But feel free to do that somewhere else, a different platform. Looking forward to that. And but thank you so much for having me. And I mean, any other questions you want to go?
I think it's pretty exciting, the stuff that you have planned. He's might be on Penn & Teller this season or next season or the following season. Might have another show. I mean, as you said, if birthday parties, anything that you might have, event, look up Ben Silver. I mean, I'm pretty still in awe of that trick he just did right now. And maybe I'm just a novice, but I mean, hey, you could probably, I mean, you said you have a YouTube channel?
I have a YouTube channel.
Yeah, so watch some of his stuff right there, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be in awe too. Actually, you know what's kind of funny is I actually had you at an event, I think 2 years ago, and people spoke raving of him. So anyone listening right there, he's a talker. He's good for events. He's good for shows. I mean, reach out to him. Watch his stuff. And hey, share this episode. Get a story out there. I think it's a great story. So again, all you Road to Growth fans out there, please subscribe. Please share. And again, I want to say thank you again to our guest, Ben Silver.
I'm honored to be here. And if you could see me right now, I'm actually going to do that Batman thing where I throw down smoke on the floor and I vanish, and Vinny will attest just like.
What the hell? Oh, shit. All right. Well, it was nice, Ben, if you're listening.
He played along well. He fought. One day I'll do that and I'll be very rich. So.
All right. Thanks, guys. Talk later.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur. Please like, subscribe, and stay connected. Visit www.vinnysd.com.
Yeah, I created a website.
Hope to see you again next week. Team Vinny SD, signing off.